I'm very conscious of the ticking of the clock, as all historians have to be, and we're getting closer to the drink all the time, if I can put it that way. You'll recall that at the beginning I said I was going to ask each of the panellists at this stage of the proceedings, very briefly, that's about 2 minutes each, so George III may have to wait yet again, very briefly to say what they think is the common ground that's emerged from the questions and their comments and the discussion. And I'm going to go directly along the table, beginning, Ken, with you.
Well, I'm not going to quite do that. I'm going to reply first to the question about visual. If I were a history teacher, and sometimes I wish I'd been a history teacher, one of my grandmother's history teacher, I would today use visual aids very, very strongly indeed, because this is a visual generation much more than I was. And take Henry VIII. There are 24 Charles Henry VIII. I'd edit each one out, starting with Charles Laughton. And I would bring them and contrast them and get the students to reflect upon whether they're fair. Well, that's how I would do your analysis of source, if you like. These are different sources. And also, the last one on Henry VIII was really rather good on explaining the sources of the English Reformation. And the other television program that was very good was the recent one on Richard Cromwell and Charles I. I thought that was a very, very good historical program. And I'd bring that out, the levellers and the diggers and all of that, done very, very well. And you capture their attention and make it interesting. It's done for you. I'd use it much, much more. And that's why, when I give lectures on George III, I give caricature lectures. I do the whole reign of George III because I've written books on it. And it's the best way. And the audiences are riveted. Absolutely, they love every minute of it. And I'm happy to come to one of your schools and do George III. Because I argue that the period 1780 to 1820, which is not in any history curriculum, as far as I can see, in Britain today, is the period where we had the greatest influence upon the history of the world and probably our greatest period. Compare and contrast 1780 to 1830. The best.
Well, thank you for that. And my neighbour has just said you got all that from Linda Colley's article, but... Steve.
Who?
Steve.
Oh, I see.
She's quite a good historian on this subject.
I would say that the common ground that we've achieved is that the government needs to talk to the history community before making any knee-jerk reactions about the history curriculum. And I fully hope that they will do that. I think more area of common ground is that history should be taught in some sort of chronological framework, not this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened, because that isn't possible to teach history in that way, but some sort of chronological approach where pupils come out with a broad sense of history, and if that means that history goes on to 16, quite happy for that to happen in my subject. Exams need looking at very carefully. I'd like to see a reform of GCSE exams, particularly in the way that sources are used. And finally, I would say, most importantly of all, because I trust the history teaching community that I've got to know over 10 years, no matter what school I go into, I would say that however these academies and free schools develop, there must be protected time for history. There must be a minimum entitlement that senior leaderships cannot bend and twist to suit timetabling, scheduling, league tables, whatever it is, because at the risk of sounding right wing, I do believe that the history of this country is the birthright of every single pupil, no matter what class they come from, what part of the country they live in, what language they arrive in this country speaking. I think it's their birthright.
Anne.
Well, I agree with Steve on that, obviously, as president of the Historical Association. The importance of the study of history at all ages, from primary through into to secondary, suitably flexible to allow it to be sort of articulated in the local circumstances, in the ethnic circumstances, suitably articulated too to create a balance between process or the skill element to it, because it is a very, very effective means of teaching all sorts of skills, such as creativity and even number. You can even create graphs, for instance. It's not quite as rocket science as might be thought, but a balance of those with knowledge and also with understanding. I believe a lot of that is happening already. Back to the very first question about the strength of history teaching in this country. We've got a tremendously strong base from which to develop, and I think the government needs to be aware of that, not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, to consult with people who've been doing it and who've been doing it effectively. And I think my final point here is that it should not be elitist. I think it does really reiterate what you said, Steve. It is the birthright of every child studying at school in this country. We want lots of people to go on to university to read it too. And that's important for us. With widening participation, we don't want just those who've done pre-U and things of that sort. We want a sort of broad cross-section of the population. That's happening now, and we need to sustain that. Thank you.
Chris.
Okay, thank you. Three points, I think. I'm not sure whether they're common ground or not. The first is that it seems to me that an understanding of history is an element, an irreducible element in the education of all educated people in a democratic society. I think that for me is the bottom line. I think that we probably need to get real about the pressures on schools as they're going to change. There will be less central prescription about curriculum. The key issues, therefore, are about the curriculum arguments at school level, and that partly depends on the HA, I suppose, or supporting teachers. And the third point is that I think that we have an obligation, which I could go on to at great length, but I won't, to teach history in an intellectually respectable way, by which I mean that the content of history cannot be logically separated from the conceptual framework in which it's constructed, or from the evidential base that generates historical knowledge. And I see outstanding work teaching some of the most challenging and intractable of learners history in an intellectually respectable way.
Thank you. Catherine.
I think it's all pretty much been said. I would subscribe utterly to the right of all children to access history, and the notion of students being prevented, and it is happening, actively prevented. A third of some academies reported that, a third of the academies who responded to the survey said kids are forbidden from taking history, and I think that's outrageous. So not only an entitlement at Key Stage 3, but the right to continue with that subject, regardless of their final level of achievement. I think in terms of where we began, if you're talking about common ground, the passion for the subject is absolutely evident in all the teachers who've spoken here and in the case that needs to be made in school. Going right back to Michael Riley's first question about why is history teaching so good in this country, Ofsted offer their own list, and the first point they talk about is teachers who have good subject knowledge, including a map of the past that enables them to make connections and contrast for pupils between the periods and places they're studying and between the past and the present. And that concern that if we are to be able to teach, and to offer a broad framework, whether we work in highly skillful ways with teachers of other subjects, we actually need specialist teachers to be teaching history. They cannot help students to make connections unless they themselves, have that vision, have that map. So Izzy's question, which never got answered, about the importance of the training of teachers, but actually the right not only to access history, but to have a specialist teacher to take you through that, I think we would also endorse.
David, before you wind up, could I thank you on behalf of everybody for chairing this meeting? You're a very distinguished historian. You made history much more readable and interesting to many people, as has the other half of your family. And thank you very, very much for that. Thank you, too, for the Historical Association. I first went to your lecture 60 years ago, and I bought lots of your little pamphlets. I've still got them. I've got the one on Kett's Rebellion. I am this country's expert on Kett's Rebellion as a result of this, but thank you. You've done a wonderful job over the years, Historical Association. Thank you. Indeed.
We are almost exactly to time, so either the bottles will be being uncorked or the screw caps will be being removed, depending on what sort of libations are coming. I have no intention of adding to the summaries that everyone has given. I think this has been, for me, I have to say, a hugely exciting and exhilarating evening. That's not its prime purpose, but it would be wrong of me not to say that that's what happened. I think, in some senses, perhaps and predictably, but nevertheless, I think very powerfully, the most important thing to have emerged, of course, is that in the end, it all comes down to the people who teach history and the sort of history that they teach. And we have to struggle with trying to make a world in which teachers are able to impart and convey enthusiasm and excitement and imagination and all the things which captivated us when we started out. And in the world that we're in at the moment, that's going to be an ever harder job. All that said, the fact remains that it's thanks to teachers that history is part of national life. It wouldn't otherwise be so. So my final words are of thanks, of course, to the panellists for having been so lucid and helpful in their answers, to all of those of you who've asked the questions which have got things going, to those of you who've made additional comments along the way, to the Royal Historical Society and the Institute of Education and, of course, the Historical Association for having sponsored this event. We could, I suspect, have gone on a great deal longer, but thank you all for a very marvellous 2 hours, and the drinks really are now available. Thank you.